Hello and welcome to Owl Radio, brought to you by the Low Vision Resource Center. Our radio broadcast to homes in San Antonio and the Hill Country, as well as to San Antonio Methodist hospitals, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A recording of this broadcast will be replayed from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. this evening. My name is Rob Shadow, flying solo today. My wife Susan is in Washington visiting our grandchild. Today is Sunday, April 4th, 2021. Happy Easter. It should be a wonderful day today with a high of 77 and a low of 55 with winds from the east northeast at 5 miles per hour. It'll be a great day for the final round at the Valero Texas Open. Good luck, UT Jordan Spieth. Good weather throughout the week, high of 81 Monday, but then we'll have summer temperatures in the 90s, topping out at 99 on Thursday. So a short spring in store at least this week. Before we start reading from the San Antonio Express News, we'd like to wish Owl Radio happy birthdays to Irene Hernandez and Gloria Aguilar. Happy birthday, Irene and Gloria. I'll be reading today from the Sunday Express News, starting with the obituaries, then turning to Metro News, Business News, and finally, the horoscopes. We'll start with the obituary listings. Adams, Moni Lee Adams, age 45, arrangements with Mission Park on Cherry Ridge. Alonzo, Isabel Alonzo, 88, arrangements with Porter Loring. Grossman, Shirley Teresa Shaker Grossman, age 92, arrangements with Legends Funeral Home. Kuntz, Judith Ann Brown Kuntz, age 87, a celebration of life will be held at St. John Lutheran Church in Burney on April 10th at 10 a.m., in lieu of flowers, a donation can be made to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Laskowski, Norbert Christopher Chris Laskowski, age 82, Porter Loring North, will handle his arrangements. Montez, John Montez, age 57, arrangements with Mission Alamo. Page 2. Boreal, Diana Ramirez Boreal, age 73, Palm Heights, will handle her arrangements. Cardenas, Barbara Elizabeth Cardenas, age 74, the Angelus Funeral Home. Ferguson, Staff Master Sergeant, United States Air Force retired Donald Ferguson, age 84, arrangements with Sunset Cemeteries. Orozco, Mary Irene Orozco, age 88, arrangements with Porter Loring. Tyrus, Earl McDowell Tyrus Jr., age 81, arrangements with Castle Ridge Mortuary. Valenzuela, Sarah F. Garcia Valenzuela, age 96, arrangements with Porter Loring. Zunker, Vernon Zunker, 93, private graveside services were held at San Geronimo Cemetery in Seguin. Page 3. Chabacro, Siavish Chabacro, age 75, arrangements with Porter Loring. De Leon, Carlos De Leon, age 71, there will be a private family graveside service at the Madronia Cemetery in Saratoga, California. Garcia, Rosa Garcia, age 45, arrangement with Castillo Mission Funeral Homes. In lieu of flowers, please send your donations to the American Diabetes Association. Garahan, Judge Sarah Garahan, age 83, beloved by her family and friends for her unconditional love, kindness, and generosity, Judge Sarah was a pillar of strength and integrity, and will be dearly missed by all who are blessed to know her. Born and raised in Stockdale, Texas, Sarah graduated valedictorian of her high school class. Shortly afterward, she married, moved to San Antonio, and raised 3 children, while at the same time At the same time as she was raising her family, she continued her higher education, eventually becoming a member of the first graduating class of UTSA in 1977. Sarah went on to attend St. Mary's Law School, earning a Doctor of Jurisprudence degree and passing the state bar in 1981. After law school, Sarah was a practicing lawyer and worked as a federal attorney for the FBI as part of the prosecution team for the Judge John Wood murder trial. In 1986, Sarah became Judge Garahan after winning the election for County Court at Law No. 4, and was so popular she remained an uncontested incumbent for more than three decades, quite a record. Judge Garahan retired her infamous green robes, shamrocks, and fiesta medals at 80 years old after spending over 30 years doing what she loved most. The children of Sarah would like to thank Helen and Juan Reyes for their friendship and support of their mother throughout the years. Helen's unwavering love and devotion to the Lord and to their mother was a tremendous source of comfort. Due to COVID-19 protocol, the family has opted not to have funeral services, but invites those who wish to send respects to share a memory to do so on the Porter Loring website. In lieu of flowers, the family requests for memorials to be made to a charity of your choice. Garza. Lawrence Adrian Garza, age 54, arrangements with Mission Park. Gertz. Sister Mary Rose Gertz, age 91, arrangements with Ebensburger Fisher Funeral Home of Bernie. Gonzalez. Udilia Gonzalez, age 89, arrangements with Castillo Mission Funeral Home. Grater. Colonel Edwin A. Grater, Jr., United States Air Force retired, age 89, arrangements with Porter Loring North. Page 4. Hull. Laverne Elizabeth Hull, age 95, arrangements with Porter Loring North. Jenkins. Linda K. Jenkins, 77, arrangements also with Porter Loring North. Kingery. Carol LaDonna Kingery, age 63. A memorial for friends and family will be held on April 8th at 1 p.m. at Mount Calvary Lutheran Church. Lapeer. Dr. Robert Harris Lapeer, age 94, arrangements with Porter Loring. Lopez, Esperanza Hope Areguia Lopez, age 74, arrangements with Mission Park. Machado, Estella Machado, age 84, arrangements with Del Angel Trevino. Metz, Karen Louise Metz, 67, arrangements with Porter Loring North. Novodvorsky. Edward Novodvorsky, age 34, Porter Loring. Paz. George Flores Paz, age 90, arrangements with Palm Heights. Perez. Aurora M. Perez, age 87, arrangements with Mission Park. Page 5. Pohl, John Michael Pohl, 67. Finch of Lavernia will handle his arrangements. Poindexter, Paul Eddie Poindexter Jr., age 79. Eddie went to his forever home on February 22, 2021. He was a 1959 graduate of Harlandale High School and worked many careers, but found his passion as a fireman and retired after 34 years from the San Antonio Fire Department. Eddie was a member of Highland Hills and Canyon Lake Masonic Lodges. He enjoyed hunting, fishing, poker, bowling, making wine, was passionate about good food, and rode on his John Deere Gator daily to feed the deer. Contributions may be made in his honor to Burned Out Survivors Fund in San Antonio. Rodriguez. Eulogia R. Rodriguez, age 86, arrangements with the Angelus Funeral Home. Riley, Dr. Fred Whitcomb Riley, Jr., age 87, arrangements with Porter Loring. Sanchez, Pedro Pete Sanchez, 79, arrangements with the Angelus Funeral Home. Sorrow, Johnny S. Sorrow, age 85, arrangements with Mission Park. Sheridan, Sylvia Sheridan, age 78, arrangements with Sunset Cemetery on Austin Highway. Stanley, Lawrence Stanley, age 72, arrangements with Sunset. Page 6. Vasek, Robert Vasek, age 64. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the University of Texas San Antonio School of Nursing Caring for the caregiver program of the Alzheimer's Association. West, Elmer Grant West, age 91, arrangements with Mission Park. Ward, William E. Ward, age 82, arrangements with Porter Loring. Torres, Henry Torres, age 70, a beloved and gifted hairstylist, died peacefully at his home March 7th after a brief illness from COVID-19. A celebration of life memorial service will be held at 10 o'clock April 7th at St. Mark's Episcopal Church downtown. Due to social distancing, the sanctuary can only accommodate 100 family and friends. If desired, friends may contribute to the charity of their choice. The Owl Radio time is now 12 minutes past the hour. We will turn to Metro News and highlight four front page stories. First, stimulus bill makes health care plans free for some, by Laura Garcia. The COVID-19 relief bill did more than deliver $1,400 stimulus checks to Americans. It also will give nearly 7 million Americans free health coverage through the Federal Health Insurance Exchange. Congress authorized billions of dollars in financial assistance for healthcare consumers under the American Rescue Plan when it was signed into law last month. This means more than 500,000 Texans without health insurance will now qualify for free plans on the marketplace. Nationally, 4 out of 5 adults will be able to find a good plan for $10 or less per month. These changes went live last week on healthcare.gov. A special enrollment period that was set to run from February 15th to May 15th has been extended to August 15th, allowing the public more time to visit the website for a cheaper plan or to check for additional savings on their current plan. United States Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra said Thursday that President Joe Biden is delivering on his promise to immediately bring down health care costs. For 2 years, these provisions will extend subsidy eligibility for individuals who earn between $51,000 to $76,000 a year, or for families of four with a household income of between $104,000 and $157,000 a year. The passage of the American Rescue Plan increases the number of individuals eligible for subsidies by 20%, from 18 million Americans to 21.8 million, according to a report by the Kaiser Family Foundation. Those who already qualified for a federal subsidy to offset the cost of monthly premiums will be able to save even more money. Federal officials say premiums will be cut by an average of $50 to $85 per person per month. People should not wait until the last minute to review their respective plans, said Ana Maria Garza Cortez, Vice President and Chief Development Officer at CentroMed, which runs Enroll SA, a local coalition that helps residents apply for health coverage on the federal marketplace. You need to go back and update your applications, he said, urging residents to visit enrollsa.com or to schedule a virtual appointment or call 210-977-7997 for assistance. That's 210-977-7977. HHS officials said the federal agency will spend an additional $50 million in advertising nationally to promote the special enrollment period, a stark reversal from the previous administration that spent the past 4 years cutting such funds, including patient navigator programs embedded in communities throughout the country. Laura Packard, Executive Director of National Advocacy Group Get America Covered, said consumers will probably soon see commercials online and on TV for the marketplace's extended enrollment period. And some of those are already being broadcast, I can testify to that. She warns there will still be many people in Texas with very low income who will not qualify for the subsidies that make the marketplace's plans affordable. They're left out in the cold, she said. Most states cover this population through an expanded Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act, but Texas has yet to accept this big pot of money that would cover the cost and then some more. So important new changes being made by the Biden administration in terms of affordable health care. Our second story today, more Texas renters face evictions. Despite federal moratorium, state protection expires. Texans behind on their rent are at increasing risk of losing their homes despite a federal moratorium on evictions, according to housing attorneys, because a Texas Supreme Court order aimed at forestalling evictions has expired. The nationwide order from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention halting evictions through June 30th, originally issued under the Trump administration, has been an important bulwark against a housing crisis as people lost jobs and incomes during the pandemic, housing advocates say. But an emergency order issued by the Texas Supreme Court that instructed judges across the state how to follow the federal mandate expired March 31st. Without the explicit backup of the moratorium from the state's highest civil court, Texas landlords could resume pursuing evictions of people affected by the pandemic, and it could fall to the federal government to enforce the CDC order. A lot of people have been saying for the last year that this eviction wave is coming and that we are about to step off this cliff into the abyss. With this latest news, we just stepped off the cliff. That is the worst case scenario, according to Mark Melton, an attorney who has helped hundreds of Dallas area tenants during the pandemic. This basically says that if a landlord wants to risk federal prosecution, that's their business, not our problem. And if they want the eviction, we have to grant it under state law. The Texas Justice Court Training Center, which trains judges and issues procedural guidance, has updated its eviction-related regulations to say that Texas courts can proceed with eviction cases, although the landlord might choose to place the case on hold, but that's totally discretionary now. This just means that the courts in Texas would follow Texas procedure and law, which doesn't have anything in it about the CDC moratorium. Now there could be local laws that would maybe have a moratorium, said Theodora Wallen, the training center's executive director. To be prosecuted by the CDC order, renters must sign a declaration stating they risk homelessness due to the effects of the pandemic, among other requirements. The CDC order subjects violators to fines up to $100,000 and a year in jail. The penalties are steeper if violating the order results in death. Until March 31st, justices of peace in Texas played a key role in enforcing the law, halting eviction proceedings they believed violated the CDC order. Now it will be up to individual judges to decide whether to follow the federal guidelines. Meanwhile, a Texas program meant to financially help renters who have fallen behind has barely taken root. In essence, the Texas Supreme Court and the state's leaders are abdicating their powers and moral obligations to protect renters from homelessness. Meanwhile, the $1.3 billion state-run rental assistance program has stumbled. As of less than 2 weeks ago, fewer than 130 payments had been made, all of that according to Christina Rosales, deputy director of the advocacy group Texas Housers, she said in a statement, and continued. Program administrators who had aimed to process applications within 14 days say that 60 days is closer to average. If landlords are able to evict tenants who have applied for rent relief, the program will fail before it has the chance to succeed, unquote. According to Christina Terloni, spokesman for the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs, as of April 2nd, the program has provided $2.3 million in rent relief for 358 households. But when the TDHCA announced the program in February, tapping federal funds, the agency said it hoped to help around 80,000 households, so the program has not reached its goal. Texas received more than $1 billion to start this first-time statewide rent program from scratch, with little to no federal guidance, Terloni said. The system will ramp up considerably in the coming days and weeks, and we are preparing to administer another round of funding, approximately $1 billion more, very soon. The slow deployment of assistance hasn't been a problem just in Texas. The Texas Tribune reached out to agencies in the six largest states, and all have experienced similar delays. Some, like Florida, have not even opened the application program for eviction assistance. For Texans who have lost income, the delays are feeding stress and uncertainty. According to a survey by the United States Census Bureau released in March, around 1.5 million households in Texas have slight or no confidence in their ability to pay next month's rent. The problem is most common among Black and Hispanic households. That's the case for Nina Maldonado, a mother of five, and Katie, who has applied to city and state rent relief programs with no success. "We would call the customer service hotline and no one would pick up," Maldonado said in Spanish. "We would be waiting for an hour and then the call would drop. We never managed to get help to fill out the forms." Maldonado works in a restaurant and her husband is in construction. During the last year, both lost hours of work and sometimes were unemployed. On top of that, the couple contracted COVID-19, leaving them out of work in December. Right now, Ms. Maldonado owes 2.5 months' rent, although their landlord is open to a payment plan. He has also said he is ready to proceed with their eviction. "He told us that by April 3rd, we haven't paid rent plus $200. He is going to court. My husband is a calm person. He tries to stay positive, but I do feel this very hard in myself. I think about where we will all go with the five kids if they throw us out." Landlords, many also struggling to pay for mortgages and maintenance, also complain about the slow and cumbersome access to rent relief. David Mintz, Vice President of Government Affairs at the Texas Apartment Association, said rent relief is key, and he expects the programs to speed up. "While the Texas Apartment Association opposes the CDC order, so long as it remains in effect, we will continue to educate rental property owners about complying with its provisions," Mintz said. "The real focus needs to be on ensuring the Texas Rent Relief Program, the Texas Eviction Diversion Program, and similar programs in local communities are running efficiently." So it could be that more evictions will start occurring because of the expiration of this Texas court order. Our third Metro story today, a very sad story in honor of a cyclist killed recently by a motorist. Family friends remember cyclist killed. Trial is set next month for the alleged drunken driver in the 2019 crash. Tito Bradshaw's grandmother taught him how to ride a bike when he was 2 years old, living with his family at Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii. He grew up to be an avid biker in Copper's Cove and later San Antonio, where he often rode an antique penny farthing bike in parades. He became a co-owner of the Bottom Bracket Social Club on Colorado Street, which was both a bike shop and a bar until it closed its doors. But Bradshaw wasn't able to share the craft he loved with his son. Instead, his son Valentino, now 7 years old, had to learn how to ride from his father's friends. Bradshaw was killed in April 2019 by an alleged drunken driver while riding his bike on the east side. Linda Collier Mason, charged with intoxication manslaughter in connection with his death, is scheduled to go to trial on May the 3rd. The family mourns Bradshaw's loss, but they feel it especially keenly for his son. "It's just hard seeing him grow and seeing him accomplish things and just feeling like his father's missing out," said Jennifer Pena, the boy's mother. Valentino's already had 2 birthdays without his father. Dozens of Bradshaw's friends and family members gathered in the 1900 block of East Houston Street on Saturday for a memorial event. There, a white ghost bike embellished with flowers sits on a post on a vacant plot of land, a stark reminder that his body was found nearby. Pena and others spoke fondly of Bradshaw, how he was charismatic, uplifting, and kind. In high school, he helped raise his baby twin nieces, Sylvia and Enkar Dinger, who are now 21 years old. The two honored their uncle's memory by getting a tattoo of a penny farthing bike with Tito spelled out in a large front tire, Sylvia on her shoulder and Enkar on her foot. "As soon as it happened, I had to have him with me forever," Enkar said. Bradshaw is also remembered in other ways through various social media videos and posts shared this week, which brought his mother, Bernice Bradshaw, to tears. "Hearing him speak is bittersweet," Bernice Bradshaw, 62, said, adding, however, that sharing his memories keeps him alive. The University of Texas of San Antonio honored Bradshaw's memory by naming its bike repair shop after the avid cyclist. Additionally, murals of Bradshaw can be found throughout the city. At the memorial on Saturday, family and friends advocated for safer bike infrastructure to prevent tragedies like his death from happening. Mayor Ron Nuremberg, who attended the memorial along with a handful of city council hopefuls, said the city has not done enough to provide safe paths for cyclists. The city is not going to be let off the hook in creating a safer environment for bicyclists, Nuremberg said, with several different bike infrastructure programs coming to the table for future bond funding. He did acknowledge, though, that these plans need to come to action. There have been plenty of plans on paper. We now have to put them into action, actually, on the streets. Family members are upset that Mason is out on bail as she awaits trial for Bradshaw's death. Jury trials have been on hold for about a year now because of the coronavirus pandemic, but they are slowly resuming. Mason's trial has been postponed several times, and the family is hoping that the May trial date will stand. Very sad story about an avid cyclist. Rest in peace, Mr. Bradshaw. And our last front page story, Metro News section today, about oil and gas and the protection of coral reefs. New protections for coral in Gulf prioritize oil and gas over science. Emma Hickerson was working in a College Station dive shop when a graduate student came in looking for help counting fish around a group of coral. Hickerson had grown up in Australia. What could the muddy Gulf of Mexico offer? But she volunteered for the job. The Texas A&M University student was working on a degree in zoology. 30 years later, she's now the research coordinator for the federal sanctuary that protects the coral she saw. The spot hooked the Australian, and her work exploring the imperiled undersea habitats in the last 3 decades has fueled an effort to protect more. The sanctuary expanded last month to include 14 more places where coral and other animals live. Some cheer as a victory, but it falls short of wider protections Hickerson and her colleagues hoped for against activities such as fishing and oil exploration. Hickerson felt decision makers did not fully take her research into account. It was a gut punch, Hickerson said. Before the expansion took effect, the Flower Garden Banks National Marine Sanctuary, where Hickerson works, protected 3 batches of coral about 100 miles offshore of the Texas coast. It's now 3 times larger, growing from 56 square miles to 160 square miles. It's the only sanctuary centered in the Gulf. Another sits in the Florida Keys, and its coral are in relatively good health. Coral reefs are an important part of the marine ecosystem. They support many ocean species, help the ocean produce oxygen, are a source of pharmaceutical ingredients, and help many economies through tourism. Warming ocean temperatures, overfishing, and disease are harming coral reefs worldwide. But those in and out of the sanctuary are buffered in part by being in deep water, far from shore. While scientists can't save them from progressing climate change, they can shield them from anchors and drilling. You think about trying to protect as much as we can, said G.P. Schmal, the sanctuary superintendent. So the scientists used improving technology to document what was in the sanctuary and beyond. A string of salt domes push up the sea's floor, forming small underwater mountains where coral grow and oil and gas can be found. Hickerson helped discover a coral named for her, Discopathes Hickersonae. They built a case for other areas to protect from the effects of commercial activity. Traps, nets, and marine debris can damage coral. Oil and oil dispersants can be deadly to coral. Fuel and other materials from boats and equipment used for fishing and for oil and gas exploration and extraction can also harm coral. There is a balance because we do derive so many benefits from the ocean and from the Gulf of Mexico, said Brent Greenfield, executive director of the National Ocean Policy Coalition, which advocates for fishing, energy, and other interests. Achieving that balance is made all the more important, given those existing opportunities as well as opportunities in the future, unquote. Industry and fishing representative praised the final result as a compromise. Environmentalists begrudgingly accepted it. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration pushed the agreed-upon plan ahead, publishing the proposal 1 day before Joe Biden took office as president and starting the clock on 45 continuous session days for Congress to review it. So on the horizon, we have potential change and compromise to protect coral reefs off the Gulf of Mexico. The Owl Radio time is now coming up on 31 minutes past the hour. and we turn to business news from the special pullout section in the Sunday Express newspaper, SA Inc. Our first story today on affordable housing, a column by Madison Islar, Skyline. Headline, At What Price Affordable Housing? Rebecca Flores arrived at the protest in downtown San Antonio on March 27th with a cardboard sign asking, Why are property taxes rising? And a fistful of solicitations she'd received about buying her house. Flores, a community activist, said she is frustrated that some of the apartment complexes in the area are exempt from property taxes, depriving the city, Bexar County, local school districts, and other agencies of revenue. We need affordable housing, but do not do it at the price of eliminating money for those taxing entities, she said. Who's picking up that gap? Flores added as she stood at the corner of Cesar Chavez Boulevard and South Flores Street, about 2 miles from her house. It falls on us. Land values and property taxes are rising in her neighborhood, she said, and investors are calling and sending flyers about purchasing her house. She plans to pass it on to her daughter, but worries about the tax bill. Flores and a handful of others at the busy downtown intersection were protesting deals approved by the San Antonio Housing Trust Public Facility Corporation, a powerful entity that most area residents have never heard of. I had not heard of it until just a few moments ago. The Public Facility Corporation is the most active arm of the San Antonio Housing Trust, a nonprofit created to generate and preserve affordable housing in the city. Five city council members appointed by the mayor sit on the board. Through the trust partnership with developers, more than $1.4 billion worth of apartments have been built, are under construction, are in the planning stages, according to a 2020 analysis by the Express News. Here's how the deals work. The trust buys the land, exempting it from property tax under state law, and the developer doesn't have to pay sales taxes on purchases made for the project's construction. In exchange, the developer must rent at least half the units to tenants making up to 80% of San Antonio's median household income. That's $46,100 a year for a couple, or $57,600 for a family of four, according to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The tax breaks that developers are set to receive through these deals are worth more than $39 million annually, the Express News' analysis shows. School districts can recover much of the lost revenue from the state through a provision that reimburses districts for property tax exemptions on low-income housing. But property owners bear a bigger share of the tax burden because of the exemptions. Michael Amazikita, chief appraiser for the Bexar Appraisal District, told the Express News last year. Proponents of the trust say it's succeeding in producing affordable apartments. Nearly half the units built on plan or planned as of the analysis last year are for families making up to 60% of the area median income. The units also wouldn't be financially viable without the tax breaks, they say, and are sparking investment in neighborhoods where developers usually would not build. Revenue that the trust gains through the deals can be used to fund other housing. 30 complexes with nearly 7,500 apartments are complete or are under construction, including 4,389 units for residents earning between 30 to 60% of the area median income, according to Pete Alanis, the trust's executive director. But the nonprofit's critics contend that the Public Facility Corporation Board often approves units out of reach of San Antonio's poorest residents, those the organization was created to help. They also question whether the threshold of 80% of the area median income should be considered affordable. The NRP Group, a Cleveland-based company involved in a number of deals with a trust, came up frequently at last month's protest. Critics say property owners are bearing the brunt of the exemptions. Developers are using the affordability crisis to meet their goals, not the needs that have been documented in our city, said Sofia Lopez, a former San Antonio Housing Authority board member who organized the protest. I want the board to reject these deals, say that they're not good enough, set the actual terms that they want to achieve based on input from impacted people, and then if the developers want it to go for it, they can, said Lopez. A 2019 report commissioned by the city showed the trust and its affiliates operated for years with little supervision and frequently approved projects with few apartments for the city's lowest income residents. Another study published last fall by the University of Texas School of Law also revealed that the housing produced through these deals is often just as pricey as market rate units. A number of Texas cities have public facility corporations, but the local trust entity has facilitated more deals than any other. The trust and developers have built some of the projects within the San Antonio Independent School District. The affordable housing definition that many of these developments use is completely out of the range of the families that we serve, said Alejandro Lopez, president of the San Antonio Alliance of Teachers and Support Personnel, which represents SAISD employees. It's not my students that are living in these new housing developments. So controversy and protest about whether this plan to help build affordable housing is actually working for the neediest. Our second business story today from SA Inc. is an interview, a very interesting man named Brian Gilroy. He breeds exotic animals and sells status symbols. Out of Goliad, Texas, by Patrick Danner. Brian Gilroy's path to breeding exotic animals in Central and South Texas actually started out as a way to claim a tax write-off. Gilroy, who previously founded an oil and gas exploration company, took his accountant's advice to buy livestock, only he chose to own non-native livestock rather than cattle or horses like most Texas ranchers. "I didn't buy them with the intent of building a business or even with the intent of making money," Gilroy said while giving a tour of his Wildlife Partners ranch in Goliad. "I was just going to have fun with my friends and with my kids." That was around 2012, almost 10 years ago. Within a few years, however, he figured he'd better start generating some revenue or the tax man might frown on the deductions he was taking. So he started offering hunts. Gilroy discovered that hosting hunters wasn't his thing and eventually gravitated to breeding. He placed ads in a publication with listings for Texas ranches offering to buy exotic animals, and the venture took off. Today, Gilroy's San Antonio-based Wildlife Partners has three ranches, 300 acres it owns and 1,200 acres it leases in Mountain Home, 1,750 acres it owns in Goliad, and 1,000 acres it owns in Pearsall. The company expects to complete the purchase of 4,000 acres in Carrizo Springs for the company's fourth and final ranch in April. It bills itself as the largest buyer and seller of high-valued exotic wildlife in the United States. Some 3,000 animals representing about 50 species roam the three ranches. They include Cape Buffalo, Grevy's Zebra, Bongo, Gemsbok, Sable Antelope, and Black Bearded Wildebeest. Wildlife Partners doesn't own the animals, though. They're owned by investors and partnerships. They are anywhere from 8 to 18 investors in each partnership. From a lodge in the Goliad Ranch, the Wildlife Partners CEO and co-founder recently discussed the company's operations. And this following interview transcript has been edited for clarity. Question: explain how the partnership works. Answer by Gilroy: for each partnership that we manage, it is $5 million to invest. We get paid $375,000 a year to manage that group of animals. And we don't make money on that. Where we are making our money is that my company owns all of the land. So essentially, our land is getting paid for as a result of managing these partnerships. The management fee is paying for the use of the land, as well as the feed and the labor that we have. The management fee is generated from the sale of offspring. We don't bill any of the partners for that. It comes directly off the revenue. So when we sell the offspring, there's an allocation for the management fee out of that. My brother Chris and I, as the primary owners of this business, this is not a high income producer for us. We're not making a bunch of income out of it. So this ranch will get paid for as a result of raising all these animals here. And so that's what we're in this for. This is a real estate deal for my brother and I. We're accumulating assets in real estate as a result of managing these animals. The animals are all owned by the investors. They get a 100% tax deduction. They get access to the ranch. In addition to working here, we work with about 500 landowners in Texas. We sell them animals and then we buy all their offspring. The only difference is I don't charge them a management fee. I just make a gap between the wholesale and retail spread. It's 30%. So a zebra, for example, I sell for $6,500. I buy that zebra for $5,000, so I make $1,500 a head for any of those zebra that I sell. I have expenses in that because I've got meals and transport trailers. I've got a fleet of trailers and trucks that are on the road 6 days a week in Texas, buying, catching, and delivering exotic animals. Question: you've disclosed the company has had growing pains. Was it profitable last year? Yes, we went from a $5 million loss in 2019 to about a $1 million profit in 2020 on a revenue stream of $20 million. Question: why are you buying another ranch? Answer: I'm completely out of land right now. We are doing the best we can to provide the animals the best habitat possible, and so we're not going to just pack them in like a feedlot where there's no grass. So land management is a primary part of what we do. This ranch is fully stocked. It's up and running. The land in Pearsall, we are also fully stocked. We're still adding some animals, but essentially we're fully stocked on that ranch, and I don't have room for an additional partnership. So the new ranch will be able to house another 5 partnerships there, and I will not operate any more than that. That's the maximum number of partnerships we reach terminal velocity. It's all I can manage in a company. Question: is hunting allowed here? Answer: on this ranch, there are some white-tailed deer that were here prior to us buying the ranch, and we don't really need them here. They're really large. And so some of our partners that are involved with our company, people that are invested with us, this last deer season, they came here and I think they hunted 4 or 5 deer. Apart from that, there's no hunting. Question: so there's no hunting of exotic animals on any of your ranches? Answer: zero, none. It wasn't that way in the beginning. Do you sell exotic animals to commercial hunting operations? Answer: that is not our business as a focus. I'm not going to tell you that's not cases where we sell an animal to someone and it ultimately gets hunted. I don't have a restriction on the animal. When I sell the animal to them, they own it's theirs. They can do whatever they want to do with the animal. But our focus is not to sell to that group. Our focus is to sell to a private landowner that doesn't want to sell hunts. Hunting is not their gig. They simply want to own the animals because they are looking at them and they're breeding them, and it's a tax write-off. When people think about the exotic wildlife industry in Texas, they immediately associate that with canned hunting of captive-bred wildlife. That is the representation the industry has carried for decades. The reason for that is that's the only story that's ever been told. Landowners are not coming forward and telling the story to the media. So the story that gets told is about the commercial hunting ranch that's selling hunts to whoever it is that's flying in from around the country. Well, that sector does exist, but that's the smallest sector of the industry. The foundation of the industry was born as a result of surplus zoo animals being given to landowners to look after and see if they could breed them in a prolific way. As a result of that, we have a multi-billion-dollar industry that exists in Texas today, but it's absolutely the result of zoos. What's happened is these small groups of animals that have left zoos have been turned into these huge populations within our state. There are species like gazelles, grevy zebra, addax, and scimitar oryx. There's a long list of animals that are critically endangered or they are extinct in their native range, and they exist in huge numbers in the state of Texas. In large part, they exist because the guy who owns a huge construction company or owns an interest in the Spurs or owns an interest in this or that, they own ranches and they like looking at the ranches. These animals are no different than owning a Ferrari. There is a bragging right associated with owning them. When someone comes into your ranch and you have these animals, you look like the coolest guy in town. It's not to say they don't hunt some on their land, but as a rule, their land is serving as a wildlife sanctuary. Texas has something to be very proud of. We've taken our land and used it to save species, not because we want to go and shoot them, because we have great big egos, but because we have great big egos and we like looking at them. It's cool, it's neat. There is a commercial model that has been created that preserves wildlife and it provides us economic incentive, and people are diving into it, and I can't keep up with the demand. Question: last year, the Express News wrote about a lawsuit Wildlife Partners formed president and filed against you. He alleged you used money raised from investors to support your lifestyle, and you've told me that article cost the company $3.5 million. How so? So we have a network of firms, financial services firms, that sell the partnership interests. We don't actually do that ourselves. I'm not involved in any element of that. So it's a network of broker-dealers, and they sell it, and their customers have made commitments to participate. And then, reading the article, they just said, we're out. We don't want to be a part of that. We've actually documented it's $3.5 million worth of lost investment as a result of people reading that specific article. Gilroy disputed the allegations and countersued. Last question. How many animals did you lose as a result of February's winter storm? Out of our 3,000 animals, we lost 59 during the storm. We were hauling water in, breaking ice out of the water troughs. We were feeding all day. We were building bedding. Anywhere where we could find a spot out of the wind, we were putting coastal hay down in a bed about 18 inches thick, giving the animals somewhere to lay down. When it's super cold and these animals are laying on the ground and adding to it, it's wet, they get hypothermia really quick. If we found an animal that was down, that was hypothermic, we'd bring it into a barn, put it under a heater, warm it back up, give it water, give it food, and then let it back out. We had probably 15 or 20 animals that we were able to save doing that. I cannot take credit. Our staff is who did that. It was a remarkable thing to watch. They literally saved the investors who own these animals millions of dollars in losses. So that's a bird's eye view of the wildlife ranching industry for exotic animals in Texas. A very interesting story. The Owl Radio time is coming up on 48 minutes past the hour. We'll have time for a short venture into a third story from SA Inc. Local venues turn to tech to shield patrons from COVID. A bevy of high-tech gadgets are helping protect people from COVID-19 and other diseases at venues across San Antonio. The devices including germ-zapping robots, air purifiers, QR codes, and electrostatic disinfecting sprayers are helping crowds come back safely. The pandemic has spawned a complex landscape of products and services to combat the spread of COVID-19. And increasingly, patrons want to know which anti-COVID-19 measures a venue has adopted before they buy tickets. But medical experts warn that while the various technologies help, they're not a cure-all that allows people to let their guard down. Quote, I would be extremely cautious about any products overstating the benefits because all of these products have limitations on their use and application, said Michael Charlton, UT Health San Antonio's Assistant Vice President for Risk Management and Safety. The most effective technologies are those that are easy to use and have a low barrier for implementation, like mask usage and high-end hygiene. What a surprise. Charlton said the most impressive technologies in the battle against COVID-19 are the medical breakthroughs. Specialized therapies such as antiviral drugs, such as remdesivir, convalescent plasma, and monoclonal antibodies have undoubtedly saved lives. Although the most significant technology currently available are the three emergency authorized vaccines. At the AT&T Center, several technologies, both behind the scenes and in plain view, helped the Spurs welcome fans back on March 12th. Apart from social distancing, masks, temperature checks, and decreased capacity, the anti-coronavirus arsenal includes touchless tickets, cashless concession stands, the Clear mobile app for health screening, and a Spurs app for purchases. The AT&T Center also has employed germ-zapping robots, special air purifiers, and electrostatic disinfectant sprayers, which more thoroughly coat to help with the increased bandwidth demand that comes with touchless and cashless operations, Spurs Sports and Entertainment has also upgraded the arena with the latest 5G and Wi-Fi 6 technology, according to spokesperson Liberty Swift. Before reopening, the Spurs partnered with Austin-based commercial disinfectant firm GermLogic to install 300 air purifiers with high-efficiency particulate air, or HEPA filters, which the company described as filters to remove 99.9% of all airborne contaminants, such as viruses. In January, the Spurs became the first NBA franchise to purchase and use Xenex's $100,000 light stroke robots, which use ultraviolet lights to blast germs. The Spurs have two of these machines on site. San Antonio-based Xenix's business has grown exponentially, with revenue increasing more than 600% during the pandemic. The health and safety of our employees, fans, and event attendees has always been our top priority, said Casey Heverling, Vice President and General Manager of the AT&T Center. We are taking additional precautions, escalating our air treatments in many public areas, restrooms, restaurants, clubs, and suites in the AT&T Center and the Spurs practice facility. What's happening at the Alamo Dome, where recently, or still, they're hosting the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament? The city has invested more than $2.8 million in COVID-19 precautions at the Alamo Dome and Convention Center. A wide variety of new technologies were installed, including sanitizing and contactless equipment, said Scott Munson, Assistant Director of San Antonio's Convention and Sports Facilities. The increased cleaning and sanitation efforts, along with the new technologies and operational changes, have increased our customers' confidence that they can hold their events in a safe manner. The city's Convention and Sports Facilities Department purchased a Xenix robot for the Alamo Dome, Convention Center, and other city-owned venues. At the 24-year-old Alamo Dome, where the NCAA's 2021 Women's Basketball Championship game will take place Monday night, that's between Stanford and Arizona, the city has installed minimum efficiency reporting values, or MERV 11, air filters in the ventilation system. The MERV 11s are a step up from standard MERV 8 filters, but the Environmental Protection Agency says only MERV 13 and higher filters can actually trap viruses. Alamo Dome manager Steve Zito said they opted for MERV 11s in a beefed up cleaning regime due to constraints with the dome's aging heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. Because of the reduced filter rate our HVAC system could potentially tolerate, we elected to use the MERV 11 in conjunction with frequent coil cleaning and daily disinfecting, he said in an email. The disinfecting is accomplished through a fogging system. The city has upgraded the Convention Center's air filtration to MERV 1315 filters, which capture 90% of air particulates, including viruses, according to Munson. We also increased our outside air intake and unit run times during higher occupancy loads, which results in additional fresh and filtered air within the facility. Visitors must check their temperatures at one of 20 Wello temperature scanning machines. The city has also installed ultraviolet lights to kill germs on escalator handles, as well as 720 automatic faucets and toilet flush valves throughout the facility. Convention Center staffers also have created Studio 5 with equipment to facilitate virtual or hybrid events with video, lighting, sound, presentation, and technical support. The upgraded equipment available in that package can provide any event or meeting the components necessary to enhance their on-site meeting or go completely virtual. Innovation and technology are a critical component to restarting the economy, but it's not the only factor, said UT Health's Charlton. Indeed, sticking to the basics is more important. This is not the time to let our guards down. Keep up with your mask wearing around others, monitor yourself for respiratory virus symptoms, and maintain rigorous hand hygiene. Then, get yourself vaccinated when you are able. So a lot of changes on the way as San Antonio and the country recovers from the pandemic and starts to reopen these mass volume venues hosting our sporting events. The Owl Radio time is coming up on 54 minutes past the hour, and it's time for my favorite feature, the horoscope listings. Today's birthday, April 4th, 2021. Here's what's in store for you, Irene and Gloria, on this Easter day. This year, you define what you wish to accomplish. If single, give love a chance to grow. If attached, always listen to what your partner has to say. Taurus flatters you. Aries birthdays, a four-star day is on the way. Take a break from an unfinished project. Leave it for another day. Let family take you away from a mental activity. Tonight, a home-cooked meal. Taurus birthdays, expect a rather ho-hum three-star day. Satisfy your inquisitive mind with a lecture, poetry reading, or visit to a museum. Use your critical thinking abilities. Tonight, listen to a different musical genre. We step it up to four stars for Gemini. Competitive activities get your blood circulating. Go to a sporting event or participate in one yourself. Tonight, state your own terms. Also, 4 stars for Cancer. Let go of an emotional wound from the past. Don't be too hard on yourself. Break free from old patterns. Tonight, think about buying a car. Leo birthdays, you have a 3-star day. Continue to think about healthy living. Fresh air and light exercise serve you well. Stick to your budget. Tonight, screen time. An excellent 4-star day for Virgos is coming up. Steer clear of an unpleasant situation. Put someone off if you must. Try your hand at an artistic endeavor. Tonight, complete tasks that must get done. If you celebrate your birthday between September 23rd and October 22nd, you are a Libra and you have a 3-star day coming. Make your home comfortable so guests can stay over. Ask for redecorating tips and help rearranging furniture. A visit with another generation can prove stressful. Stay tight-lipped and you won't cause unnecessary friction. Tonight, invite friends to share a meal. 4 stars for Scorpios. Positive memories remind you to get in touch with siblings or an old classmate. Talk about attending a school reunion. You will look excited thinking about it. You'll get excited thinking about it. Look at your yearbook and have a good chuckle. Tonight, make a to-do list. Sagittarians, we drop down to 3 stars for you. Expand your culinary skills. Follow an adventurous recipe with condiments you never tried. Search for a cookbook filled with international cuisine. Tonight, finesse, more tact. Also a 4-star dynamic day for Capricorns. Let go of negative feelings since they flare up when least expected. Show off your impeccable taste. Dress with bold colors. You are sure to get noticed to those you want to impress. Tonight, thank someone for their loyalty. And for me and fellow Aquarians, it'll be a ho-hum 3-star day. It's time to forgive someone's missteps and move forward. Listening to soft music or singing in a choir has a calming effect. Give in to the urge to spend a quiet day at home. Tonight, watch a film that makes you laugh. And finally, Pisces, you have a 5-star dynamic day. 5 stars for you. You know the right words to help a friend seeking your advice. Take an opportunity to get out and mingle with people in social situations. Tonight, online shopping for a gift. We have been reading from the San Antonio Express News for Sunday, April 4th, 2021. Thank you for joining us. Have a very safe and a very happy Easter. And stay tuned for more from Owl Radio with the 3rd hour of the San Antonio Express News. Thank you for listening.